Florida often makes headlines as the site of gun violence and carjackings and natural disasters like sinkholes and hurricanes. These tragedies, though, may be nothing new for the Sunshine State. Rather, they might point to dark patterns in its history, dating as far back as the 16th century. In his new book, Finding Florida, The True History of the Sunshine State, T.D. Allman uncovers the not-so-tourist-friendly account of Florida's past. It's published by Atlantic Monthly Press. I'm very pleased that it brings T.D. Allman back to our show. Good to see you again.
I'm honored to be here. You know, I listen to you in places like Cambodia. I think when I need a little bit of sanity intelligence, I go and get to WNYC and I listen to you.
Oh, that's very kind. This April, Florida celebrated the 500th anniversary of its discovery by Juan Ponce de Leon, who, by popular account, arrived at St. Augustine in search of the Fountain of Youth.
Stop, was he, Leonard, stop.
Was he the first European to land in Florida?
Oh, of course not. I mean, when I started writing this book, it was so much fun. There were two things I thought. I don't have to write about Indians, and slavery is so boring, you know, and bad and everything. And I went back from the beginning, and everything is fake. Everything is fake. Ponce de Leon, he never went anywhere near St. Augustine. He didn't discover it. Florida was on maps of Europe 10 years before he got there.
The French were there before the Spanish.
Exactly. And now we get, not before him, but later they came. And Florida was the king of Spain. You know, we think of the Andes and the Amazon. That didn't stop the Spanish. Florida did. And so the king of Spain, Philip II, he forbade further settlement. He said her harbors are too shallow, her soil too sandy. Then they found out the French had got there. And so it was like the Cuban Missile Crisis in reverse. And the real founder of Florida, Pedro Menendez de Avilés, tore across the Atlantic in 5 or 6 weeks. He massacred all the French people. And I say this is the real Florida first. The first mass killing of white men by white men on territory later to become part of the United States.
Did he found St. Augustine?
He did indeed. He should have settled at Jacksonville, which has the best natural harbor on the East Coast, just as Tampa has the best on the West. But the French were there. So he had to go into St. Augustine. The reason St. Augustine is where it is it did have a semi-acceptable anchorage, and it was close enough for him to sneak up and kill the French.
Is it the oldest city in
America? Of course not. Of course not. Nothing there dates back from, oh, I don't know, your great-great-grandmother's time. And, you know, people drive south and you go past all these towns in New England, Virginia. You know, they go back. Not St. Augustine, but one of the great...
Well, why has Menendez been not largely forgotten? Forgotten.
Because everything is taken out. You know... I think it has to basically goes down to the fact that there's nothing in Florida except swamp and pine barrens. And, you know, you somehow have to turn swampland into real estate. And how do you do this? You do it by lying.
Well, how responsible for all of that is New York's own Washington Irving?
Oh, Washington Irving. He's a very bad man, Leonard. I really want to warn you and your leaders. Speaking of bad men, I want to do this. Ask me about originalism, and maybe the next time you have Justice Scalia on your program, you can have me across it. I'll say, now, why did you make up originalism 200 years later, Mr. Scalia? You know Thomas Jefferson started changing the Constitution immediately, and that's where Florida comes in there. When the early Americans were obsessed, our leaders, our founding fathers, were obsessed with Florida. It sort of it didn't fit in with their Cartesian Enlightenment sense of symmetry because it was still Spanish.
It wasn't part of the original 13
colonies. No, absolutely not. It was given to Spain, returned to Spain. And Jefferson sent Monroe to Paris to get Napoleon to use his influence to have the Spaniards sell us Florida, give it to us. And instead, as we know, he didn't come back with Florida. He came back with Louisiana. And so Monroe walks in. He's, look what I got for you, Mr. President. And Jefferson says, well, we can't do this. We don't have the power under the Constitution to take all this land. And then it was just like today. His aides, Madison, the so-called father of the U.S. Constitution, And Monroe started. We said, well, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And Jefferson said, I bent the Constitution until it cracked. And he actually, in his own hand, wrote a constitutional amendment that would have authorized him to take Louisiana and Florida. But that was the beginning of the imperial presidency.
So when did Florida actually become a state?
1845.
That late. Is that why slavery came to it rather late?
Yes. And again, you can think of Florida as a mirror of the United States. It's always telling us things about ourselves we don't want to know. What did it tell us in 2000? It told us we have an electoral system that doesn't work. What is it telling us today about Trayvon Martin? We have a fundamentally unjust system that goes back to the race laws. Now, what it told us way back then was that slavery was an aggressive, expansive, industrial-size institution. And that's why it was expanded into Florida.
But Spain maintained slavery in its Caribbean possessions.
Yes,
how come
but
they hadn't
brought
it into Florida?
Well, slavery existed in Florida, but there are many different kinds of slavery. The Romans, the Greeks, Africa, tribal, and all slavery is bad, of course, and it's never excusable. But, for instance, under Spain, slaves could carry guns. They could be educated. Florida had a very large free black population when the Americans.
And many of them called themselves Seminoles, didn't they?
Yes. Again, unfortunately, I in these interviews, I have to spend so much time knocking over the old furniture, I don't get to the really neat stuff. But some of you may remember the Seminoles. The first thing wrong, again, they weren't an Indian tribe. They were like us Americans. They were a mixture of white people, detribalized Indians, blacks. And their great leader, whom we remember as Osceola, his real name...
Billy Powell.
Billy Powell Jr. His father was a white man from Georgia, his mother a mixed race one. Now we get to Florida souvenirs. He was finally captured by violating a flag of truce. Even the American soldiers were appalled. And he was taken to South Carolina, and he died of exposure. And the doctor, Dr. Frederick Whedon, whose name I am restoring to history, after he died, cut off Osceola's head and took it back to St. Augustine as a souvenir for his children. And I call that, we had the first killing of white men by white men, now we have the first souvenir.
We also have a president who declares war against the Seminole and then eventually sends them off to Oklahoma?
Yes, it's impossible to not talk about Andrew Jackson. He summarized the time, and basically he transformed the southeast frontier, which was Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. And he dragged them into states, and he unleashed an enormous first expulsion of the non-white indigenous population, including mixed-race people like Powell's family. That's why they fled to Spanish Florida. What I have to say about Jackson, what I found out in researching this book is, we sort of present him as this liberal antecedent of Franklin Roosevelt. He did expand white male rights, which is good. But basically what he did is he helped make the Civil War inevitable. Because you may remember in 1835 we had the nullification crisis in South Carolina. People said, so what? But then you had these three extra new raw slave states, Florida, Alabama, and Mississippi. And they immediately followed South Carolina's intemperate declaration of secession, with the result that the Confederacy now had a hinterland. It had a capital. And the other slave states were quite prudent. I mean, Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, they waited and waited, North Carolina. But as a result of the intemperance of the South. Now, the other thing you're taught in school, you know, is like slavery. The Civil War wasn't about slavery. Well, when Florida had its secession conference, the leader said slavery is the issue of all value. And they were very frank about it.
My guest is T.D. Allman, who has written about Florida in the past, Miami City of the Future. He has worked at the Miami Herald, so he actually has had a long-time experience with the state, which has led to his latest book called Finding Florida, The True History of the Sunshine State. Well, Florida had this brief history of slavery, and yet, during the Reconstruction period, wasn't it particularly tough on black people? You write that there was a high number of lynchings in Florida. So why did racial violence manifest itself so strongly in Florida following abolition?
I think what you have to go down to, even today, it's where people come from other parts of the country. They're raw, they're new, they don't have tradition to sort of guide their hands. I do have to interrupt you for just a second, Leonard. In my long career, I've been excused of many things, but writing for the Miami Herald
is
not one of them.
Oh, I'm sorry, you got that wrong.
I've written for the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, Vanity Fair.
Oh, it was Miami City of Florida was on the Miami Herald's bestseller list.
Well, that's all right. I just thought
you don't mind selling books there. You just
don't
want to work there.
No, absolutely not. So I think part of it, and the other thing is it's never had
Please
a real...
Please forgive me.
Leonard, I would forgive you far for far more than that, so don't worry about that.
Okay, anyway, so we have Florida being particularly tough on black people after abolition, despite the fact that it had one of the briefest histories of slavery.
That's right, and I think part of it is because it was so brief.
They enacted the black codes. What are they?
Well, they basically are variations, were the predecessors of the Stand Your Ground law, which said it was okay for Zimmerman to kill poor Trayvon Martin. They basically, a black could be, even have anything done if you were in the wrong place, if they didn't like you. And, of course, all this violated the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. One thing I'd like
But I just want to back up. Are you saying that the Stand Your Ground law really is a racially biased law?
Oh, absolutely. I'm saying that 100%. These laws are enacted by the Florida legislature, and it's all wink-wink. Everybody knows it. But, of course, that's the case.
Well, in the case of the black codes, the federal government stepped in and
precisely
and overturned them.
And this is one of the themes that emerged from the book. I never have an angle. I never start with a thesis. But what we find out over and over again, going way back to the beginning in the Seminoles, Florida cannot save itself. It needs the federal government to intervene. And that's what happened when the Seminoles, the white Southerners, they loved to start wars, and they never knew how to win them or fight them.
Well, but right now Florida is resisting any federal intervention.
Absolutely.
So to speak. You know, the governor is turning down money for medical insurance. It turned down money for infrastructure rebuilding because it sees itself as independent of the rest of the country?
No, it's just because, I don't want to, there are a lot of people in Florida. There are a lot of very good people. But Rick Scott, the current governor, what's interesting about him is he's a made-up Floridian, like many Florida extremists are. The worst racist governors right after the Civil War, one was from New Hampshire and the other was from Massachusetts. And they came in and they did things that Southern-born white people never did. Now, Rick Scott was from Ohio, as many historic figures are. And when he was elected, I found it so fascinating to see him doing what they only call carpetbaggers those who were not who weren't racist, but Rick Scott is right in the carpetbagger tradition. You come down there, and the other tradition that he's in, even more interesting. Don't chuckle, Leonard. This is serious history this morning. We're eating our broccoli. The other thing that comes is rich men come, starting with Ponce de Leon, right down to Rick Scott, and they look at Florida. I call it the Play-Doh state. They say, do anything I want. They squeeze it, and they do it, and they use their money, and then it oozes back.
And we don't have time to tell the story of how that affects Disney World and many of the housing.
We can't talk about the CIA and how
the CIA and Disney World. Well, that's why people read big books like yours. Also, the fact that the election, the Al Gore, George Bush election, isn't the only one where Florida had a major impact. There was also Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel J. Tilden. I don't think any other state has had that kind of impact on presidential elections.
I don't think so. I guess the thing is, the one thing I wanted, a couple of things. Immigration will save us. So, I talk about the negative things in Florida, but what you have this wonderful influx of people and Anglos and Latinos.
But Marco Rubio is one of the people who is involved in the writing of the new immigration.
You know something about Rubio? The next time you hear him talk, close your eyes and you'll hear Richard Nixon speaking. But there are lots of great people there, and Anglos and whites merge together. The problem we have the greatest difficulty solving in this country is the legacy of slavery. And in the book, I say it only lasted as a state 15 years, and we're still living with it.
So are you suggesting that I reconsider retiring to Florida when I give up doing this radio show?
You're never going to retire, Leonard. I won't let it. I will come and block the door. I have a place. I live in France. I live here in New York and in several places, fortunately. But I love living in Florida, too. But I don't feel that because I enjoy certain aspects, I, as a historian, should not tell the truth.
Now, there is another side of Florida, of course. It is the site of one of the world's most important art fairs, Miami Basel. So there are some good things happening in Florida, if you think Miami Basel is a good art fair.
There are lots of good things.
T.D. Allman, his follow-up to Miami City of the Future, is Finding Florida, the true history of the Sunshine State. We never got to Harriet Beecher Stowe, to Washington Irving, but that's a reason to read this book. It's from Atlantic Monthly Press.
Can I mention my website? No. All right.